friends, and welcome to Haydn Behind the Music Stand. I'm your host, Patty Ryan, and with me is Emily Tsai, who is the oboist of Windsync and Patagonia Winds. She's also adjunct faculty at St. Mary's College, the Holton Arms School, and Northwestern Visual and Performing Arts High School, and freelances in the D.C. area, performing with orchestras like Washington National Opera, Maryland Lyric Opera, and Amadeus Orchestra, among others. And we'll be talking about her travels around the world. Welcome, Emily. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so similar to Kara, who also is the bassoonist of Windsync, we also met through the collaboration that Kinetic Ensemble and Windsync did back in 2015? 16? Somewhere around there.
I think it was probably 16.
16.
16 or 17, maybe.
Yeah.
So
that was just such a special, Windsync being a wind quintet, Kinetic being a string orchestra of 16 members. It's like kind of getting a little bit of a small mini orchestra together, but yet we're doing such interesting repertoire that's
right,
not,
yeah.
So it's just, and also like the school shows we did together, I was always just so impressed about watching how you guys conducted school shows, and everything's memorized and so engaging, and the kids loved you. And yeah, anyway, I had a great time. Yeah.
That was really great. And we always love collaborating with other instruments because we are always constantly just playing with each other.
Right.
So anytime we get an opportunity to play with like Kinetic, a string group, or like a pianist, I guess not recently, but before the pandemic, we were touring with a percussionist and
he
wrote us a piece of music for wind quintet and percussion. It's always really cool to see other instrumentalists and how they work and how to collaborate with them, because it is different playing with them versus other wind instruments.
Totally.
So we loved our projects with Kinetic, and of course the school shows. When we go to those schools, they are beginning string students. And so we often have, like, there's one time in our festival that we have in Houston that we had Kinetic join us at these schools. And it's really great because you guys are actually the string players. We're up here just kind of like talking general music, introducing them to our instruments. But you guys like really helped us to bridge the gap, and they're like, oh, they're playing my instrument. And so the kids can be like really inspired by that. So that was like a really awesome collab and very fond memories. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I also really find, especially with Kinetic, again, similar to what you were just saying, we play with each other all the time and we're string players. So articulations and matching sound is something that is very string heavy. But when we collaborate with wind players, it's a very different way of conceiving these ideas of articulation and tone and color. And so that's always really fun to have that kind of different palette of sorts.
Absolutely. I just always like, because actually I also play violin. I started on violin when I was like four. And I still play. I actually teach violin also in the DC area.
Yeah.
But not as much anymore because I've kind of shifted. I didn't have time to teach both.
Keep it up.
But it's really cool because I often use string lingo when I'm teaching wind players, or even when we're talking to each other in Windsync, because your bow, your movement of the bow is like our air. And we can't see our air, but we can see your bow.
Sure.
So it's like a really cool physical rendition of what we're doing internally. And sometimes visualizing it like that can really help wind players play with that kind of deeper, expressive, you know, flowing sound that string players can get really easily, and you can see it. So it's like, it's really cool. Yeah.
But I could say the same thing on the opposite side of it's really useful for us to watch you breathe, because for string players, we kind of maybe get stuck a little bit of this constant loop of up bow and down bows. And so
I have a funny story. So when I was, you know, I think I was in like junior high, or I can't remember, but I was playing the Brooke Violin Concerto.
Sure.
And in my lesson, I was playing it, and then I got to the end of the first page and I was like, and like, apparently my teacher was like, I'm shocked. You were like holding your breath the entire time you were playing this. And I was like, oh, because like I didn't realize it. And then my teacher gave me a whole big speech about like, you got to breathe even though you're a string player. And I was like, that's kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, strings, you don't need your air, but you do need to breathe. So
absolutely. Yeah. I know sometimes for me, I try to use breathing as a way of relaxing myself before I start playing. But sometimes I also can't really keep track of when I am breathing or not. But I know I am because I'm not fainting. Right. So. But I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like, even collaborating with wind players or brass players, it's a very visual thing for us to watch you breathe, and we have to copy the same motions too. And so it helps. I think it's just a, overall just a helpful reminder for both of us,
yeah,
you know,
great.
As woodwind to strings. Yeah. Anyway, can you tell me your most insane performance story? I'm assuming it's not the holding breath Brooke violin.
No, that wasn't a performance. That was a lesson.
Oh, okay.
No, actually, I don't really have too many like insane stories. I have a couple little like funny ones. I guess the most intense performance that I've ever given was actually with WinSync. It was when I first joined WinSync. It was my first year with the group. I was the only new member and the other four had been playing with each other for several years before I joined. And we decided to do Fish Off, the chamber music competition. They were like, okay, let's figure out some rep. We've been touring. We had our rep. I was like very comfortable with it. We'd memorized it all. And then they got the bright idea to be like, no, actually, we're going to do this piece, which was Maslanka's third quintet, which is a beast of a piece. It's like 25, maybe almost half an hour long, which is long for a wind player.
Yeah.
It's very technically intensive. Like it's... Oh. Anyway, so they threw this at me like, I think like a month maybe before the competition or maybe at most 2 months. And we hadn't been really touring with it. I've never played it before. I never memorized it. And so we were ramping up and I was like, ah, I gotta memorize this thing. It's like crazy. And then at Fish Off, when it was like the final round, we did like the last movement, the third movement, which is the most crazy one.
Yeah.
And
of course,
that was super intense for me because I was like, here we go.
Yeah.
I've never actually performed the whole thing from memory in front of an audience, and this is going to be one of the first times. Boom. And like, luckily, I held on just enough that we won.
Yeah, I mean,
but like that was one of the most like personally intense moments for me.
Yeah, under pressure moments.
Pressure, yeah. I've had a couple other concerts where like I remember I was playing Fiddler on the Roof in a pit, and there's one oboe solo in it. I was actually doubling on violin and oboe because it was a very small production.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
very small like community theater thing.
Yeah.
So I was the fiddler, but then I also the conductor wanted me to do some of the oboe solos and stuff that they had. And in the middle of my solo, I think maybe because it was like my oboe had been sitting there, my reed had been sitting there, whatever. And then I went to play the solo and my reed, I could feel it pop in my mouth.
Oh God.
It cracked.
Oh.
And then when that happens, luckily could still make a sound, the pitch drops really low. So it was super flat. So I felt it and I was like, oh no. And I just like bit down and I was like, we're going to finish the solo. And then I was like, in the middle of a solo, I don't know how many times that's happened to other people. Like, my reeds crack, you know, all the time, but not usually while I'm playing.
Okay.
So that was another like,
oh, weird. Well, I wonder what would cause a reed to. By the way, you're the first oboist I've ever had on Pied Behind Music Stand.
What an honor. Wow.
Yes. And I wanted it to get an oboist for a really long time because I know how the double reed world is so foreign to me. And I know, and it's like, I feel like you guys go in the closet and just like shave away and it's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
So I'm just so new to it. Could you introduce me to, I mean, you don't have to go through all of the But can you introduce me to at least like, why would a reed pop or especially why would it pop in your mouth as you're performing?
I mean, there's a number of factors. Oboe reeds in general are like the most finicky of all the reeds because they are so tiny. Yeah, that's why we obsess over them and we have to make them all the time. And like, I get the question a lot, like, how long does a reed last? Well, I mean, it depends on how much you play it. And I play a lot. So my reeds kind of only last me like 3 to 5 days.
Wow.
If I'm playing on it a lot.
Yeah.
That's why I have so many reeds. Now, they're really affected by temperature. They're affected by humidity. They're affected by elevation. All the stuff that
saliva,
you...
Saliva too?
Well, I mean, like saliva, yeah, in a certain way. So the saliva on the reed, it breaks the cane down eventually.
Yeah.
That's part of it too. But like, I think mostly it's just sometimes if it's like really dry or something and it's like dry and clammy and cold. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure why that happened to me.
Yeah.
But it must have been a combination of something like being down also in like a pit area that can also cause wood to like, I don't know.
Act weird.
Something to do with humidity. Yeah. And then if you're trying to manipulate the reed in such a way, it could easily just crack under pressure. And
gosh.
Yeah, and sometimes I just open up my reed case and I'm like, oh, there's a crack, you know, because sometimes the dryness and the humidity is just something that we try to control, but we can't. And some oboists have like a humidity controlled reed case, which is great. I have actually a humidity controlled oboe case in general because I want to make sure like flying
everything
around a lot, you know, I don't want my oboe to dry out, but that can help. But like sometimes if it's just out and playing and you're in a really dry place, like sometimes you can't help it. So
No wonder. I mean, I can't imagine. I'm so sorry that is like... That's part of your profession, but
No, it's fine. It's our cross to bear. Like, I will say when I started on the oboe, I was in middle school band, of course. I played violin, and then my school didn't have an orchestra. They only had a band. And my band teacher, we didn't have an oboist in the school. He kind of tricked me into playing the oboe because he didn't actually tell me all the things like, you're going to have to make your own reeds. The oboe is considered one of the hardest instruments to play.
Right.
Like, he didn't say any of this stuff.
Yeah.
He was just like, oh, you can make a sound on the reed? Here, you're going to play this, you know?
Right, and of course.
I had no idea. And then later on, when I was taking private lessons, my teacher was like, okay, now we're going to make these reeds. And I was like,
it's like, what?
You have to make part of your instrument? That's crazy. But you, once you get into it at a certain point, you like understand what you're taking on. I try not to be like the common like stereotype of the oboist is that we're super anal and we're like, you know, very like, you got to have details and stuff like that. I try not to be like that, especially around my colleagues, because they don't deal with it the same way. Like it's, when I'm around other oboists, so yeah, we like complain about our reads all the time.
Yeah.
But like around other musicians, I'm just like, I don't keep it to a minimum because like, they're just like, oh, here goes the oboist again, complaining about the reads.
You know? Right,
like,
right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I try to keep it to a minimum. And actually over the pandemic, WindSync did like a little fun just chatting video where we talked about how our instruments are like our personalities or our personalities are like our instruments. And one of the things they said was that I'm one of the most low maintenance oboists that they've ever worked with, which is like great because a lot of oboists are very high maintenance.
Right. Well, it's also like, you have no idea how much I've been hiding. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, occasionally I bring it out because I guess another crazy performance story is that sometimes we play in these high elevation places. Like we were in Ruidoso, New Mexico, which is like a ski town. We were in Reno, Nevada, which is like, I think it's 5,000 or 6,000 or something.
Yeah.
And like other really high places, Santa Fe, those are really intense, insane performance stories for me because I'm just like, and that's the time whenever my colleagues are seeing me sweat about my reads.
Yeah.
And like, I try to make new reads when I go to the places like that, like while I'm there, but sometimes you don't have time. And then you just have to be like, well, you got to play, you know, like whatever you have, you know, the show must go on.
Right. Exactly. Gosh.
Yeah.
How long does it take to make a read on average?
From start to finish, it's a multi-day process. But if you're just talking about like tying and scraping a read, I can do that actually pretty quickly because I've been doing it for so long. I don't like to, because if you take more time in scraping it, generally the reads actually kind of lasts a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than if you just like scrape everything off. There are oboists who do that though, because they want a fresh read for every concert that they play. And that's like fantastic.
I didn't realize
but
that's
if a thing. I had to, I could make a read from tying to scraping in like 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Like if I had to, but I really don't.
That's express.
Do that.
Like,
That's like if I'm desperate and I'm like, I have no reads and I gotta play, bam. Yeah. Like, I can, you know, whip out a read. But generally I do it over several days.
Okay. Yeah. My heart goes out to you guys. I can't complain about the expense of my C string when I don't have any of the strings. So.
No, but every instrument has their challenges. But
That's fair.
It's just funny because I feel like I'm that old apprentice, like carpentry, like the old arts, like blacksmithing, like the things that people don't do anymore. It's I feel like I'm still part of that tradition, like making my own reeds, you know?
Yeah, totally. The artisan. No, but the thing is, like, there's no way to system, because of the fragility of the cane itself, there's no way to make a manufactured oboe reed that's going to sound like the sound that you want, right? That's at the standard.
So now they are actually coming out with plastic reeds. So clarinetists and bassoonists actually have quite good plastic reeds.
Okay.
And I'm so jealous because there is a plastic oboe reed. And right now it's, not to go into too much nerdy detail, it's a short scrape reed. It's a European style short scrape reed. And I play on an American long scrape reed.
Okay.
And there was American long scrape reed in the works of being produced, but it's kind of been put on hold, I guess. I'm waiting for the day when that comes out. I have no shame. Like I will take that plastic reed because if I'm up in like 7,000 feet elevation, like bam,
you need it.
Plastic reed. And then I don't have to worry about it, you know?
Right.
And other oboists are like, oh, no, I have to make my own reed. I'm just like, I'm just, give me the plastic one. Like, I'm waiting. I'm waiting.
Okay, I have to ask now because I'm curious. What's the difference between a short scrape and a long scrape?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's literally, so if you look at a short scrape reed, it's only scraped like halfway down and like the bottom half of the cane still has like bark on it.
Gotcha.
It's also wrapped slightly differently. They sometimes have wires on it. They're wrapped in like this like plastic wrap kind of thing to keep it from leaking, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
American scrape reed, you can see it's basically scraped all the way almost to the thread. There's a tiny bit of bark down there.
Yeah, that's what I'm used to seeing.
And that's why we call it the long scrape because it's the long.
What's the difference in tone or in...
So actually, I think that the oboe in particular is the most different and unique sounding instrument from country to country or from region to region. I mean, everybody, like the violinists, you know, is like, oh, that's a Russian violinist or oh, that's a blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Yes, but to the general public, it's harder to tell. tell. On an oboist, like, you can really tell the difference, even to an untrained ear. And it's a lot of it is because of the reed. So European reeds, I mean, like, I've never really played on, I've played on, like, a couple of them. I can't really, I mean, if I bet if I worked at it, I could probably.
It's just not,
you
know,
figure it out. But you have to have a different kind of embouchure for it. And like, for instance, I love German oboe playing and Austrian oboe playing. Like, that is just so beautiful. They have Austrian oboe players. They often have Viennese oboes, which is like a slightly different oboe even.
Oh, okay.
So like, they have a very unique sound, and French oboe players, British oboe players, like, they have maybe like a lighter sound. The American sound is considered to be pretty deep and dark, like very loud. And to me, sometimes too much. So I like a little bit more like life in my sound, and like being able to be flexible and like do all sorts of colors and stuff. And American oboes are awesome, of course, but like sometimes I feel like it can be too heavy.
Okay.
Whereas European oboe players, depending on the region, they can be very, very light and very bright sounding.
Yeah.
And a lot of American oboists are like, ooh, that sounds so nasally, da, 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 you know, like, but to me, I'm just like, oh, that's so exciting, because they're doing all the stuff that you can't do necessarily. The range of colors that they can produce is awesome to me. Mm-hmm. So like, I've actually been told that I sound a little bit more like a German player, which to me is a big compliment.
That is a compliment, but
like,
I think, yeah.
But like, it's because probably I don't have the darkest, deepest sound, and I like to have that like range.
I guess. You've aspired for that. I could pick your brain about being an ovis for days, and I'm trying to like, maybe later I'll like not resist that. No. But I'm sure there's good, there's like a whole lineage of why certain regions with oboe playing have certain acoustical goals in mind, or the lineage, because I mean, clearly Eurocentric things are going to have more history behind the reasons for.
And I mean, like,
versus American.
So, like, the father of American playing is, of course, Tabuteau. He came over, he was playing in the Philadelphia Orchestra. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he's kind of like the guy that created this American sound. And yeah, he's European, but I think he had like a different aesthetic, and like coming over to the States and stuff, he was the one that really shaped it. So our, you can trace all of the American oboists back to this one guy, Tabuteau. And then in Europe, of course, there's so many of those types of people because they have such a longer history with this instrument. So yeah, so I think that's where in Europe you get such a varied, like, it's not just like they all sound the same. No, no, they sound very, very different. And then the American is all stems from Tabuteau's playing and his idea of the sound. So
Oh, well, that was a shorter answer than I thought it was going to be.
No, I don't want to get too into the weeds or something. But for those interested, like, looking up stuff about Tabuteau is very interesting. He's a very interesting person. And he's actually kind of called the father of all American wind playing in general.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sometimes. But he was an oboist, so yeah.
Right. Nice. Okay. Can you tell me about Perch and Zina?
Zinnia. It's okay. And I told you, actually, so Zina was Zinnia's name when she was at the shelter.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I don't want Zina, warrior princess. So I just added an I in it, like Zinnia, like the flower, but I wanted to keep the X.
Yeah.
Because Zinnia with the flower is spelled with a Z. Mm-hmm. So I actually, I adopted both of them from their rescues from a shelter. When I went to Maryland for my master's after I went to Eastman, after graduating from Eastman, I had always grown up with cats since I was in like kindergarten. So I kind of wanted to get back into that now that I'm not living in a dorm. Mm-hmm. And I had a roommate. Her name was also Emily, and she also played the oboe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know. And she also went to Eastman with me. And then we both went to Maryland.
Oh my gosh.
We're like the same person. But anyway, so she's a big animal lover as well. And we were going to, of course, be roommates. So I was like, this is perfect. I'm going to get two kittens. And so I got them when they were kittens, and that was 2011.
Wow.
And yeah, so it's been
10 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So now they're like 11, I guess, years old. And it's just been great. They love to sit on my lap. They sometimes both try to get on my lap.
Yes.
And Perch, the other one is Perch. He's my black cat, and he's this very athletic, like bigger. And he, sometimes bullies Zinnia a little bit because she's smaller and she's very roly-poly. Like, she's not super fat, but she's like definitely, the vet called her rotund at one point. And I was like, oh, shoot. Yeah. So I try to get her to lose a little weight, but she's not too bad, but she's definitely very like gentle, very female. Orange cats are kind of rare because the orange gene, I guess, is more linked to male cats.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So like, that's why I was like, ooh, Zinnia, because she's so, you know, unique and stuff. Yeah. And she's a very gentle person. personality, while Perch is a lot more like, I'm the big
like
man
extroverted
on campus and stuff, whatever.
Sure. Okay.
But then it's funny when we go, when I have to take him to the vet or if I let them outside on our porch or something, Zinnia is the more adventurous one and Perch is the coward and he waits until Zinnia explores and then he's like, okay, she's okay, okay, she's then I'll go out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just, it's so funny. He like talks a big talk, but then he's actually a scary
cat. Yeah, that's
so,
really funny. Yeah. Aww.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been with me since then. And then actually when I met my now husband, when we first started dating, he saw that I had two cats. He's slightly allergic to cats actually. Uh-huh. But he actually thought one of the cats was my roommate. So he's like, oh, I can deal with one. I can deal with one. Right. And then later on I was like, no, they're both mine. And he was like, oh no. But he's grown to love them.
Of course.
But of course we have to be aware of his slight allergy. It's not too bad, but they can't sleep with us in our bed, unfortunately, which is really sad because they always used to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to make sure that like
small sacrifices. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A little sacrifice, but yeah.
Aw. Well, please give them little pets for me.
I will.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Are you ready for some spitfire questions?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. Mahler or Bruckner?
Mahler.
Debussy or Ravel?
Debussy. He's my favorite.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Nice. Cats or dogs?
Cats!
What if he says dogs, though?
I mean, I love dogs, but I travel a lot. So I've actually kind of wanted a dog, but my husband, again, is like, I'm the one who's going to take care of it because you're gone all the time. And I'm like, that's fair. So I will wait on that.
Yeah, gotcha. Appetizer or dessert?
Appetizer.
Sparkling or still water?
Sparkling with lime or lemon.
Yes, I'm on that train too. I like that. Yeah. Fan favorite question, alternate universe musical instrument. So I guess you can't say violin either.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Okay, so my favorite other instrument is actually the horn. But
you
I
just
don't know
like
if
the
counts.
Hardest instruments, I guess.
I guess so. I don't know if it counts, though, because I actually did take horn for 2 years while I was at Eastman, just for fun, as if I didn't have enough to do already with
TV. I know, it sounds like it.
Yeah, but like the reason why is because my dad played the horn in the Taiwan military band, army band.
Gotcha, okay.
Because back then, all men in Taiwan needed to join the military for two years. And so he played horn. And so he gave me his old horn. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, I can play a string instrument. I can play a wind instrument. I used to be a drummer in a rock band, actually.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What?
So percussion.
What haven't you done? Yeah.
And I was like, oh, the only one I don't have is a brass instrument. So I actually took 2 years at Eastman. This could be one of those insane stories, actually. I forgot about this one. So my horn jury, because I had to do a jury at the end of my second year, I think. I played the first Mozart horn concerto.
Okay. I don't know how hard that is. Is it hard?
Well, there's four Mozart horn concertos and one and three are like the easier ones and two and four are the harder ones.
Okay.
But it's still like challenging.
I mean, that's an accomplishment.
And so I was like very proud of myself. My horn jury, unfortunately, was the day after my senior recital. And in my senior recital, you know, like, of course, I'm like, practicing so much. I was also organizing a lot. I put together a 40-piece orchestra to play with me on my senior recital. But I also, for an encore on my senior recital, played violin. And Richard Kilmer, my teacher, played cello. Mm-hmm. And another oboist, Trevor Mowry, played the piano. So we were called the secondary trio because these are all our secondary
instruments.
And we played the first movement of the Mendelssohn D minor piano trio.
Oh, wow.
For an encore.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious because Mr. Kilmer, this is a long story, but it was hilarious because Mr. Kilmer, like, because we tune with our embouchure, obviously, when we're playing the oboe, but on the cello, you don't. But he was still, when he was out of tune, still trying to move his embouchure around. He was like, ooh.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was so funny. And if anybody's at Eastman and Sibley Library, it's in there. It's recorded. So you can go listen to him play cello. But anyway, so my horn jury was the next day and I had asked Trevor to play the piano for me, to accompany me. But he had been practicing the Mendelssohn because it's a very difficult piano part.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't really look at the Mozart. Mm-hmm. So when I went in for my jury, I was like, I'm already like, oh boy, I'm tired, but I'm going to do it. It's going to be fine. And Trevor just bombed the...
Oh no!
he dropped everything except like the bass line, I guess. So he was just like, like with one hand. And I just cracked up. And like, as any brass player knows, like if you're laughing, you're going to crack like every note that you're playing. So like the second movement of the Mozart, I was literally like, fwah, 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 fwah. Like every note was cracked because I was trying to not to laugh.
Not laugh, but you're like.
And then like at the end, we like bowed and then I went off stage. And then once the door closed, like Trevor and I just cracked up.
How was the jury not laughing at you at the same time?
I don't know, but it was like grad students teaching us. And
I see.
My parents were still in town, so they were like peeking in through, they weren't in the room, but they were peeking in through the window in the back.
Yeah.
And they were laughing
so hard. Like, I saw them shrink down and disappear below the window thing. Yeah. So, because they didn't want to, like, distract me from laughing. And then I went up to my horn teacher and I was like, I'm so sorry. That was really bad. And she was like, you know what? You were not the worst one.
What? Oh,
and
my God.
Like, woo. and she still gave me an A.
Oh, good. A for, yes, exactly. Well, that's oh my gosh, that's such a funny story.
It's a funny, okay, so, but back to like the alternate, if I had to choose another instrument, I think I actually might play like guitar or something because, again, I was a drummer in a rock band for when I was in high school. It was super fun, like, and I also sang.
Yeah.
But I never actually, I tried a little guitar. I think I might actually be good at it if I tried because I played violin.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of cool because it's a chordal instrument. Like I play all, you know, solo instruments. True, like you only one note at a time. Yeah. And if you play two multiphonic, it doesn't sound great. But like piano and guitar, you can like do a whole song by yourself and it sounds great, you know?
Yeah.
And fuller, I guess I should say. So like guitar or piano would be great. I mean, I could play a little piano, but that would be my alternate reality.
Okay. Thing, I guess. I mean, and also that makes a lot of sense. And also it's such a versatile instrument and so pretty. Like, I mean.
Oh, yeah. It's so pretty. Yeah. And like I used to play in an oboe guitar duo and like.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed the aesthetic, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you get a really good guitarist, it's amazing what they can do. Like my favorite Pixar movie is Coco.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
partially it's because the guitar like music is just so cool and the way they animated it is so accurate. Accurate and like, yeah, it's just, yeah, I just love that kind of music.
That's a good choice. So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Early bird or night owl?
Night owl.
Pandemic guilty pleasure? It doesn't have to be so guilty, but I mean, we shouldn't feel guilty about things that we did during the pandemic.
There are two things that come to mind. Okay. Number one, and this is more my husband's, I guess it's not guilty. This everybody did this, but of course you drink more alcohol than the pandemic.
Yeah.
But he went overboard. Like he got, I don't even know how much money we spent on it, but we have a huge cabinet and we filled it with like liquor.
Oh,
and then
cool.
He wanted to get more. So we put in three floating shelves, filled those. And then we wanted more. So we got a bar cart, a huge bar cart. And then we filled that. And it is,
he
got really into mixology and he's actually very good at it now.
Yeah.
So I guess that was like, I mean.
Yeah, that's fun.
We basically drank every night, which is probably not a good thing for our health.
Yeah.
But that was really one of the things. The other thing for me is I like competition cooking shows.
Yes. Okay.
So I actually started back in season one of Chopped on Food Network.
Yeah.
And I watched all the way up. I think now I'm in like season 37 or 38 or something.
Yeah,
I literally watched every single episode of Chopped.
Oh my gosh. That's a mountain I want to climb too. That sounds like so much fun. Those episodes are only like 20,
Oh no, they're like 40.
Oh, really?
40. Yeah, they're longer, but so fun. I mean, like I wanted to do like at home Chopped like competition just like with some friends and be like, let's just do it, you know, like get the basket ingredients.
Yes.
I'm not really a good cook by any means, but like I just kind of enjoy that and I love eating food. Like one of the things that every time I travel, I just base a lot of my vacation plans around food.
Yeah.
So now actually, and this is like post-pandemic, quote unquote, I mean, we're kind of still in it.
Yeah,
but I've been now watching Top Chef from season one.
Oh, okay. And, so it's like the, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of like, gets my little guilty pleasure, I guess.
Yeah, no, totally. Favorite professor shout out?
Richard Kilber. Woo! He is one of the biggest influences on my life. I mean, my master's professor, Mark Hill, he's amazing as well. I mean, I think it's just because I spent 4 years with Richard Kilmer. He supports his students so much. Like, he is at every concert that I played at Eastman. Even if it was, like, another instrument's recital and I was playing on it, he was there.
Wow.
And even I played at a church gig one time and he was there. He showed up and it was like, wow, you know? And then, I mean, he didn't go to all my concerts, obviously, after I graduated because that would be impossible. But like, when we played near Rochester, we played at the Corn and Glass Museum. He drove out to come see us play. And then, you know, when I got married in 2018, we were going to have our wedding at Yosemite National Park because we love outdoors. Yeah. We love camping. We love hiking. Yeah. And Yosemite was one of the first trips that my husband and I took together when we were dating. Anyway, what happened though is that the wildfires were really bad that year.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually shut the park down 3 days before my wedding.
Yes.
So we had to redo everything in three days.
Oh my God.
And I had several guests actually say, oh, we can't make it because our flights are going into this other airport that's closer to Yosemite and they didn't want to switch it to San Francisco now. And like, so we actually had some guests cancel on us, which was sad. But Mr. Kilmer, like, he called me right when I sent out the email. I swear it was like 10 minutes after I sent out the email. He called me and he was like, I already changed my flight. I
already changed my rental car. I'm going to be there no matter what. Like, you can count on me. God. And I was like, and in the midst of me just be like breaking down and pulling my hair out, like that was like so nice to hear, because I had been out of his studio for quite a few years, but he's still there for me, you know?
Yeah.
And he's been there professionally for me. He's been there personally for me. And like, you know, I couldn't ask for a better mentor. He's celebrating, I think he's celebrating his 40th year of teaching.
Wow.
Yeah. If anybody, any oboist listening to this, if you get a chance, even just to take a lesson with him, it is so worth it. One last thing is, like, when I was auditioning when I was in high school, I went to take a lesson with him before my audition, and I got caught in a snowstorm driving from Indiana to Rochester. Wow. And I was going to be very, very half a day late because I was stuck on the highway for 12 hours in the snow. And I called him and he was like, don't worry, I'm going to keep the school open until midnight if I have to, you know, like, get some rest. You just do whatever. I was this no-name kid from Indiana, you know, and he was like, don't worry, we're going to do it. And then we had like a 2-hour lesson, even though I only paid him for one, you know? Like, and he said some really just inspirational things. And I was so tired. Obviously, I was like, didn't really get much sleep, but like that lesson was life-changing. Yeah. And then he's like, if you do this, this, and this, you know, you have a very good chance of getting accepted. And I was like, oh. And then I did it. And I was like, I've got to do it. And then getting accepted. So even when he didn't even know me, he just has a love of teaching.
Yeah.
And sharing knowledge.
He really cares. Yeah.
Yeah. He cares. So.
What a wonderful human. Oh my gosh. I want to meet. Can I take a lesson?
I know.
I'll start oboe. Actually,
even if you don't play the oboe, if you get to work with him like in chamber music or whatever, it's totally worth it. He is just this wealth of knowledge. Like I said, he played the cello. He played the baritone saxophone in a jazz army or military band. I can't remember which one. But he is so versatile. Like, he's not just like, I'm an oboist. Like, no, he is an artist. And he just happens to use the oboe as his vehicle. And I try to strive to do the same thing, you know? Well, like,
sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, and he's wonderful.
Most inspired musical hero of any genre?
Oh, okay. So this is kind of funny, but when I was younger in high school, you know, when I was in the rock band and stuff, I actually tried to make myself like pretty emo goth.
Yes, I was there with you. I was there.
So like, I know, and when people meet me now, they're like, oh, really? But anyway, one of my biggest inspirations was actually Amy Lee from Evanescence.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And she, like, I just loved her voice, and I liked how she was so dark, and like, she wasn't trying to be like, I don't know, like a lot of other like women pop artists and stuff like that. They try to like, I don't really particularly like how they sing because they try to manipulate their voice into making it sound like sexy or whatever. Amy's voice just like, boom, it's like powerful. And like, I was so inspired by her. Like when I was in the rock band, I actually wrote music for my rock band, and it was a lot heavily inspired by her.
Yeah.
And I don't, I'm not so goth or whatever anymore.
Right.
But like, just like her, this is what I'm going to do. I'm
that's
a rockin' woman singer, and I don't have to be like this cutesy whatever. I can be just as like hardcore as any dude out there and like change the world with my music. It's pretty cool. So
yeah. Most transformative performance experience?
When I was in Germany for a festival, the Moritzburg Festival. It's kind of a small one. Chamber music, but also they do orchestra stuff. And my particular year that summer I went, I was playing principal on everything, which was pretty cool. We played Beethoven 2 and the Prokofiev Classical Symphony. And we played it in the Berlin Concert House. That was one of the places that we played.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I've arrived. You know, I was still in school, obviously, but like, I was like, I've arrived. I had like an almost out of body experience where I could see myself performing, and it was awesome. The orchestra was great. Everybody was just really, really wonderful musicians, and they came from everywhere, like all over Europe and Asia and North America, and I think there was some stuff from South America too. Like, it was just like boom, like everybody's there, and it was really cool to like meet these people around the world and then to collaborate on this. We actually, like, everybody stood except for the cellos.
Oh, okay.
So we were standing, so that was cool. And then like the whole thing just like made me, especially in the Berlin Concert House, I was like, this is great. This is like, if I didn't know before, I knew now. This is exactly what I want to do. And even though it was an orchestral thing and I'm mostly doing chamber music now, like, but the conductor, who's Grant Llewellyn, he's a British conductor, he really made it feel like a chamber orchestra. So it was like everybody had a part to play. And it was more like chamber music to me than like a big orchestra. I love playing an orchestra, but chamber music, I think that also kind of influenced me. And like, so in WinSync, we stand when we perform too. And I think that actually was just like, oh yeah, like that's how it should be done.
done, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, what a cool experience. And I feel like at some point every musician does have that kind of, as you say, like, I've arrived moment. I'm glad that that was in such a wonderful festival and a wonderful hall.
It was magical. City. And like Mortsburg, of course, is so charming. There's like, there's a castle and a lake. Oh,
yeah.
Beautiful.
I mean, what can you, desert island piece of any genre?
One of my favorite pieces of music, period, is La Mer by Debussy. I don't know if I would take that on a desert island because I'd be surrounded by water and I'd be like very depressed that I couldn't get off.
That's fair enough. That's like too real. Yeah.
But La Mer is just like, I could listen to that, the first movement especially, over and over and over again. Actually, during the pandemic, I did an oboe choir arrangement of the first movement of La Mer.
Oh, wow.
Just to busy myself.
Yeah, of course.
So it's like a 10-part. I have oboes, English horns, and I actually got my hands on a bass oboe too.
Whoa.
So, and I just recorded myself over and over again, and I made this arrangement.
Is it on YouTube?
And it's pretty fun. I now have a version of it with bassoons because, you know, who has two bass oboes? Anyway.
Is it somewhere on YouTube or can we?
Yeah, it's on my YouTube channel, Oboe Friend.
Okay. Nice.
Yes. And again, if people want the music, like, they can email me. I mean, I don't know how many opportunities there is to play an oboe choir piece, but you know, it's out there. But that maybe not on a desert island because maybe that would make me sad. Can it be an album?
Sure.
The Linkin Park Meteora album.
Yes! Oh my gosh, so amazing.
I loved that album so much. I think I played it so much that I actually like wore it down.
Yeah.
That was like another big influence on me. I love Linkin Park.
Yeah. No, that puts me right back to, oh my gosh. I feel like we are like the same person.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Awesome. Well, you finished the Spitfire questions. Congratulations.
Oh, great.
Isn't that how it goes?
It's exactly, it's in the, in the end, the beginning there.
Yeah, exactly.
On the kazoo. That's great.
What if I did like the rap part on the kazoo?
Oh, you're gonna be like. Oh, that's the best. I love it.
I didn't even I love it. You. Oh, too silly. Oh, wow.
No, great. Never too silly.
All right, Emily, can you walk me through your, you've already along the way kind of left little Hansel and Gretel kind of treats of like your musical orange story. So if you can string those along, how you discovered music, how did you discover, I guess violin was the first instrument, but then oboe, and then when it was professional, I mean, you know what I'm asking.
Yeah, sure. So yes, violin, first instrument when I was 4, because my older sister played piano, and my parents being Asian were like, you can play the piano or the violin. And I was like, I want to be different. So I played the violin. Yeah. Asian violinist, not that different. So, you know, whatever. But I liked it. And my sister and I actually played a lot together. Yeah. And then in middle school, I picked up oboe, like I mentioned earlier, in junior high, kind of tricked into playing it.
Right.
But then I kept up both instruments. And actually, there was a very pivotal moment when I was in eighth grade where I actually got into a little bit of a accident. So like, this is a bad idea, but I was playing blindfolded kickball. Which is, you're partnered up and one person's blindfolded and your partner has to tell you where to go. So anyway, I was the blindfolded one and my partner was getting like super excited. And so they weren't telling me clear directions.
Right.
Like they're like, go this way. And I was like, I can't see
what does
you.
This mean?
You know? Yeah. So like it ended up hitting heads with this like really big guy and it knocked me off my feet.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it counts as like a concussion because I didn't like black out or anything, but I was definitely knocked off my feet and I went back to school the next day and halfway through the day, the room just started spinning I actually couldn't see straight anymore. Mm-hmm. So the school called my mom and picked me up and then I just like slept, obviously, because I had a headache and everything. When I woke up, my vision was blurry and there was, I didn't wear glasses. I didn't wear contacts at the time and I couldn't focus my vision. So that was unfortunate and it didn't go away. That was the thing. So this was a saga that lasted, I think 6 months or more, maybe more than 6 months. And so I had to have my homework read to me. I had to have my tests read to me at home.
Oh my God.
I actually couldn't play oboe because I would get really bad migraines from the back pressure of playing oboe. So I actually had to stop playing oboe for several months, but I kept playing violin, but I couldn't read the music. Mm. So my violin teacher was wonderful. Her name's Margaret Jones. She was like, don't worry, we can still learn. We can still make music. She taught me the first movement of the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto all by ear.
Whoa.
The thing is, from not reading the music started to make a lot more sense. Like you could just by listening how you're supposed to inhale music is through your ears and not reading it. Cause sometimes when you read it, you're like, oh, there's a measure line. Exactly. And so I'm going to like do a little hiccup here that you don't mean to or whatever.
Right.
You know, I have to do this accent. And no, like when you're just listening to it, you can really just be like, oh, I want to stress this because the music calls for it. You know, that kind of thing. And that experience of learning music without seeing it got me to start being like, wow, maybe I want to do music as a career. I got my vision back, which is fantastic. My violin teacher, again, her dad is a retired osteopath doctor, which means it's like a bone doctor. Anyway, he referred me to a colleague of his who was still practicing. And what they did is they like put their hands like almost like a massage on my neck and my back and stuff like that. And they slowly, I don't know how they do this, but they manipulate the bones to go back into where they're supposed to be. Because just from like touching my bone structure, they're like, okay, it seems like you've had a hit from the front of your head and you've also had a hit from the back of your head. And earlier when I was even younger, I had actually hit the back of my head falling before.
Yeah.
And so they noticed that and then they were just saying, we're just going to like nudge your bones back into place. And I was like, this is not going to work. Like, this is crazy. Yeah. Like I didn't, but like it was, what else are we going to do? Like my parents had taken me to Johns Hopkins. They take me all over the like doctor after doctor. And they were just like, you know, we've seen this before and usually just goes away on its own, but there's not really a treatment. Anyway, so this osteopath doctor, I went to see him, I think for like 6 weeks, once a week. And then at the end of that, like I actually started to get my vision back. So that was fantastic. And that, again, was through my violin teacher, her dad, and that kind of thing. And
wild.
So it was, it was crazy. And my parents were probably just like, relief, you know? So like, but that was actually the turning point when I was younger to be like, I want to major in music in college because music is now really fun. And before, I'd actually wanted to quit violin. And then I actually wanted to do a double major in violin and oboe when I was doing undergrad. But my parents, they wanted me to do another degree, which is why I did the bio degree.
Gotcha.
They wanted me to do pre-med. because my parents are all engineers. My aunts and uncles, all engineers. Mm-hmm. My sister, all my cousins, they're all doctors.
I'm
the only one who's like, I'm a musician.
But
like, so they want me to do that. So I didn't do violin and oboe.
So why did you choose oboe over violin then?
And it was basically just because the oboe is a rarer instrument and violinists are great, but they're a dime a dozen. Like there's so many good violinists I didn't want to be blended into the sea of
background
violinists. I wanted to stand out and be like a soloist. And the oboe is definitely a solo instrument, even in an orchestra.
Did you feel though like an identity towards one or the other than just sort of maybe those practical reasons?
I actually really loved both equally.
Equally?
I still love the violin. I actually, like I said, I still teach. I still play it. Yeah. My husband actually also plays violin. He's an amateur musician. He's an aerospace engineer, but he plays violin. He's actually really good. Those hard reasons of just like, oh, the oboe is like less known or whatever. But I absolutely love the oboe. Like, it's a wonderful way for me to express myself because the oboe is a very expressive instrument and I'm a very expressive person. So like, but then at Eastman, of course, do the dual degree, couldn't do both. But I did play violin in a lot of my friends' recitals. I played in the student-run orchestra as well. Mm-hmm. So I still kept it up. It was great. Mm-hmm. And then upon graduating, I always did chamber music every semester. I took Baroque chamber music as a class. I was in multiple groups at the same time. I had this huge collaboration for my senior recital. When I graduated, I was awarded the Chamber Music Award as well as a performer certificate. And that was like, aha! I love collaborating. Mm-hmm. I want to do that. Let me do chamber music. Mm-hmm. That seems like a great path. And Richard Kilmer was kind of nudging me in that direction anyway. You know, he was like, I think I see this in you. And he was right. And so for grad school, I auditioned for several grad schools. But Maryland, the University of Maryland, had a wind quintet fellowship that was brand new. Like I was the very first group to do it. But it was a full ride plus a very generous stipend for a student. Mm-hmm. So going to school for free was great. And then it also was like my parents were like, oh, okay. She's not going to be living in a box on the street. It's okay. You know, like,
yeah, no, right. Exactly. Yes.
So like, I was like, oh, I got to go to Maryland. And also I took a lesson with Mark Hill. Fantastic. The nicest guy and like, it was all about the music. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And at a graduate level, that's what
that's
I wanted.
What you need.
At Maryland, it was 2 years. I did my master's of a really intensive wind quintet, but I also got to collaborate with a lot of the faculty and the school sent us to Italy to do some touring and playing at their festival. And then, you know, it was just so many great opportunities.
opportunities mm-hmm. and doing chamber music in grad school. And then, of course, when I graduated, you know, I was like, what am I going to do? You know, but I actually pretty quickly got plugged into like getting gigging and, you know, that yeah. kind of stuff, but also plugged into several chamber groups like the yeah. guitar duo mm-hmm. and the Patagonia Winds. Like mm-hmm. that was almost immediately out of school. I like plugged myself into those and I just kind of started to get more and more chamber music as well as orchestra. I took some auditions. Mm-hmm. I won a few, lost many, yeah, you know, well, how it always goes. So I was playing in orchestras too, but it was always this thing about chamber music. And so when WindSync needed a new oboist, the previous oboist actually also went to Eastman, but we didn't overlap. She had graduated by the time I got there, but her name was Erin Tsai and my name's Emily Tsai. So oh, it was okay. like, you know, but anyway, but she was talking to Kilmer, whatever. She was like, I'm leaving the group. Do you have any recommendation? And Kilmer was like, oh, Emily, you know, and she was like, what? So she like researched me. She got to know me. She recommended me to the group. I interviewed and then auditioned. And the rest is history because yeah. I was like, that's perfect for what I want to do. I want to mm-hmm. be in a chamber music group that tours and performs all over. And
award winning as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And winning some competitions and stuff. It's been really fun and it's been a wild ride.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I mean, I knew a little bit about you, but like also when I was doing a little bit of back research to like just get your bio kind of sorted out, it's just like, wow, I feel like, what haven't you done? What haven't you accomplished kind of thing? Like, you know what I mean? So,
no, oh, it's just, I mean, there's always so much more out there for everyone. Oh, that's so nice of you to say that.
But I mean, yeah.
I feel very lucky. I mean, like, I mean, a lot of careers are like, you got to be in the right place at the right time. You got to know the right people. Like,
yep.
It's not super, super fair. But if you establish a reputation, like while you're, I say this all the time when we do university residencies, if you establish your reputation now while you're in school, the people going to school with you, they're going to be your colleagues when you're professional and they'll want to work with you and word will get around. So you got to start, you can't just see college as like, it's time for party and fun away from my parents. Like, no, you should probably, you know, make good friends and be very responsible for mm-hmm. what you're supposed to be there to do, which is to learn and start being professional right away.
Yeah. It's like working towards your brand, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you become known as that like reliable, you know, musical, fun to work with, like personality, mm-hmm. you know, and no matter what kind of setting you're in, like whether you're playing for children mm-hmm. or if you're playing at Carnegie Hall, you come mm-hmm. at it with the same enthusiasm. Like mm-hmm. that's the kind of people that people want to work with.
Yeah.
If you're like, this gig is below me, like, no, no,
yeah.
you should never have that attitude. I mean,
right.
And I learned a lot of that from Kilmer. I mean, he was all over the place and playing baritone saxophone. I mean, like, but everything he did with, you know, mm-hmm. I'm in it.
Totally. Yeah. Do you have any current projects that you're working toward? Or
I mean, I'm very busy with, of course, WindSync stuff. We have a lot of stuff coming up in WindSync. We have some new commissions on the horizon. We have an album called All Worlds, All Times, and it has two commissions of WindSync's and another living composer's piece on it. So just all living composers. Otherwise, I'm very busy like teaching in this area, in the DC area, playing with a bunch of orchestras. But in terms of like my own personal projects, I actually did a lot of that over the pandemic. Like I said, the La Mer project was a big one. And then I also arranged Adagietto from Mahler 5.
Oh,
I know it's for strings, but I did it for double reads because that was actually the song that I walked down the aisle to at my wedding.
Oh,
so I did a double read choir version of that. And I do some other arrangements for WindSync. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on an arrangement right now. But it's been pretty busy.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, are you ready to take a break?
I'm sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Great. We'll be right back. Welcome back from the break. So you were telling me that you have a very impressive passport slash if there was one for the United States, I don't know. I don't know how to, you know, we don't have like a card we take around. Yeah.
This is very cliche, but I love to travel. It's like I'm on a dating app. I love to travel. I was born in Pennsylvania, moved to Indiana, moved to China for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and then moved back to Indiana, and then went to New York for my school, then Maryland, mm-hmm. now I'm in DC. Mm-hmm. So even just growing up, I moved a lot. I moved internationally, and my parents, they're both from Taiwan, so mm-hmm. we went back to Taiwan a lot to see family. Mm-hmm. We just traveled a lot as a family. Now I've been to 5 of the 7 continents. So I haven't been to Africa or Antarctica.
Is that like, is Antarctica going to be a destination at some point?
It will.
Just so that you
it is on my bucket list for sure. But
oh,
it's
really?
Very expensive.
expensive to get down there. Yeah. So that's like obviously the limiting factor, but I would love to go sometime in my life. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, but and actually Africa, unfortunately the pandemic hit, but we actually have some friends who are living in Africa right now in Kenya. And so we had actually made plans to go and visit them, but then the pandemic hit. So Africa is a very real destination I would love to go to. And I would love to go to multiple countries if I can. But yeah, so I've been to the other continents though. And in within the US, I've been to all 50 states and Puerto Rico and of course DC because that's where I live. And I loved that accomplishment to me was just, I mean, accomplishment, but it was just like,
what it
it's
is.
Awesome no, because it is. It's like, I feel like I'm still pretty young. But I've been to all those states and it's just like really, really cool feeling because I have, again, I made like a social media post about it where I listed like a little memory from each state that I went to. And actually for my honeymoon, my husband planned a trip for us in South America. So we went to Chile and Argentina. And so we were actually in the southernmost town besides Antarctica. So we were almost to Antarctica for a little bit. And we also backpacked in the Patagonias in Torres del Paine as part of our thing. So we just love traveling. And with WinSync, a lot of the states that you wouldn't think to visit, I've been to because of WinSync. So, because we've just played all over. We usually tour like 100 plus days a year before COVID. And we go to all the states. So it's sometimes we're in states that are not the state you want to be in at the certain time of year. Like for instance, we were, actually the story for when I was in Alaska, we went to Anchorage in February.
Oh my God.
Yes, it was really cold. But
was there any light?
The days were very short, but yeah, there was there was some light. It was actually the weekend of Ferrandi, which is, if you've heard of the Iditarod, it's like the really long dog sled race. Gotcha. The Ferrandi is the shorter ones. So that we were there for that, and we actually saw like the dog sled teams, and they were so cute, and they were in the little booties. But no, that's actually my husband surprised me and flew out to Anchorage and coordinated with the other guys in WinSync to surprise me and propose. So that was like, it was great. And it was, I know, it was so such wonderful. A sweet, like he's very thoughtful and like I was not expecting it at all, like and but it was, he wanted to do it outside, but since it was February it was too cold.
Absolutely. I would not. I live in Minnesota. I would not.
That's pretty cold. So sometimes we go to the places not the ideal time of year, but you know, it's still great. So I think that traveling has always been going to be a passion of mine. I'm lucky enough to be able to do it. I know some people aren't lucky enough to be in a situation where they can travel, but if you can, it's just really great. Like growing up in Indiana, especially when I was there, I grew up in Indianapolis for part of my childhood, but a lot of the kids at my school had never been out of the state, let alone the country. And I just feel like it's too bad because I was living in China for a few years and stuff. You really get a global sense of the world from a young age. And I think that really opens up people's minds and to see the different cultures, to see the different like ways of thinking and stuff. And like, I think that if people were willing to travel to other places and other cultures and experience them, we would understand each other a lot better and be a lot more open-minded about a lot of things. And I agree. It's just a wonderful opportunity that I have. I wish upon other people. I know it's not always possible.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I also love traveling too. I did a lot of camping when I was a kid. I also have relatives in Taiwan. So I went there when I was like five. So,
but those are some awesome.
Yeah, Taipei? Like my first little memories. Yeah, and I can't remember. I mean, again, I was so small. Okay, but around the area. But there's really something about widening your global perspective and how that really transcends further than just the literal going from destination A to B. I guess I'm sort of curious from your perspective, either if you want to answer this from visiting all 50 states. I haven't gotten that. I'm close, but I haven't gotten there completely yet. I know. I have some of the southern states I haven't.
Oh, I was going to say, which ones?
Yeah. I did just tick off Kentucky recently, though. I've been there. But yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of like the southern states I haven't really quite visited yet, in like Maine or something.
Was my last one.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
We actually took a trip up last August. My husband, we just drove up the coast and we went to Maine. And that was my last one. Yeah.
And that was just because you're like, I need to get this one.
Yeah, I literally had one left. I had one left and he was like, well, let's go. And I was like, awesome. And so like, you know, we went to Acadia. We did went to Baxter State Park, which is like very much wilderness. We ate a lot of lobster.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Oh my gosh, it's so fun. Yeah.
So going back to my question is, along the way, did you have any kind of epiphanies or profound realizations? Or if my question's not worded well, but you know the intent.
Oh, no, right? Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, I think like you, I've done a lot of nature stuff and going to a lot of national parks has been amazing. And you're just like, to me, I'm just like, we got to save this. Like, we can't,
yeah,
we can't keep going on as a society, like not paying any regard to nature. We come from nature. We'll always be a part of it. And so why don't we take care of it, you know? And I've been listening to a podcast and they talked about national parks and they're saying that like, if we take care of the national parks, it's actually better economically for the country anyway. So it's like, even if you don't care about nature, you care about your money. So like, take care of the parks.
Right. Yeah. What's the rationale behind that? Is it just tourism or?
Yeah,
is
like
it...
tourism and also just like, just simpler things like pollinators and that kind of thing. Okay. Just like the food we eat, we couldn't eat without pollinators and
bees.
You know, and they need places to go, you know, they need to be protected. And so I think a big inspiration, a big epiphanies that I've had just seeing nature, Yosemite was a big one, obviously. It's so cool. There's nothing like getting back out to nature. Like Winsink goes to the Grand Tetons pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. We were there just last winter and just seeing the Tetons just jutting out from the ground is like fantastic and inspirational. And my biology degree actually is in ecology and evolutionary biology. So it's not really pre-med. It's actually more in the life, I guess. And I love animals. So like, and I see your cat back there. He's so cute.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I would say is like just going to places, seeing nature, the country. It's a beautiful country.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful world.
Yeah.
The other thing is meeting people. When in Winsink, you know, a lot of touring ensembles, you kind of just dive bomb a place, you play your concert and then you leave. You don't really get to meet the people. You don't really get them to the community. But Winsink is a little different in the fact that like we actually do a lot of education performances paired with our main stage performances. So we do get in the community. We go into the schools. We go into other places like retirement communities, of course. We often do receptions after, like we like to go out after our concert and talk to people. You know, this is pre-pandemic, of course. And then oftentimes they have like little dinner parties for the donors, you know, like that we maybe do a pop-up in or whatever. Like we are a very agile group because we don't need music stands. Yeah. We don't need chairs. We can just whip out our instruments and play something at a whatever. And talking to these people across the country has been also a huge, like not epiphany, but inspiration. This is middle America. Like there was one tour that we did 30 cities in 2 months.
Wow.
And it was all zigzagging middle America.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing these people, you know, they're predominantly white, you know, so like sometimes I'm literally like the only Asian or person of color in the room. But
it's a big deal.
Music brings us together and we just talk. I've been known in our group as the one of the five of us that when we do donor events or whatever, we sit at different tables to talk to donors. I'm always the one that gets into the deep philosophical conversation with people because I like want to hear what their life is like. I ask a lot of questions about them. Like they obviously ask me a lot of questions. They want to know what I'm doing, whatever. But I want to know about them because like, how did you get to this little town that we're in? What's your background? How did you get connected to music if you're, you know, not really musical yourself? Like I love hearing these stories of all these people who are involved in the, are patrons of the arts throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool because it makes me feel like, you know, I'm doing something, I'm changing, like a little change in someone's life is worth it, you know? And, you know, in that 2 month period, it was a slog, let me tell you, but it was, it was really tough, but it was really cool to see like the people really enjoy it and really like talking to them. They just express how grateful they are to have music in their lives. And that's awesome. You know, it makes me feel very fulfilled as a musician.
Yeah, and they've never seen an ensemble like Winsink before.
Yeah, you know? And like oftentimes, probably, like we're like the only classical music act that comes to their town for the season. And a lot of presenters, they choose us as their classical act because we're very, you know, we choose music and program things that are very approachable. Whether you're a seasoned concert goer or like a new to the classical music, we choose music that people will enjoy just like listening to it. We can also, of course, do like the very like intellectual, you know, like
art music.
That's fine, but like we try to program to who we're playing for because I think that's important to do as a musician. You can't just be like, well, I want to play the Schoenberg, you know, if you're going out to like people who don't really know classical music, like, they're going to be turned off by that. Or maybe they will. I don't know. But like oftentimes they turn off and like, like
how it's presented,
you know. So right. you got to choose what you're going to perform for your audience to make the most impact. You know, and we've played shows where people have just like cried at the end of our shows because mm-hmm. they're so touched by the music. And like one of our encores that we play is You Are My Sunshine is a wonderful arrangement that we had a friend of the group do for us. He's a jazz pianist. Mm-hmm. His name's Chris Siemba. He did this wonderful arrangement for us. And that's sometimes our encore. And people, they start crying. They sing along with us. And it's just great to see that and see how you're touching people's lives.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I feel like that's my favorite kind of traveling too, is not just, well, I mean, maybe not always in the context of music, but even if I'm trying to visit a city for the first time, of course I want to go to all the big places to go in that city or do the thing that the city is most known for.
Right.
So,
right,
but I also really like just taking an afternoon and walking around, just walking the streets and seeing the people and getting a sense of character of the city. I feel like when I do that kind of traveling, which isn't so like go to this destination, then go to that destination and let's get hop on this train and do this and that, it kind of slows things down to a way that you are at the same timing as the people around you. Personally, I think that's important to always kind of remember to get on that level with the people and the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that, like, when my husband and I travel together, when we go to a new city, the first thing that you can look up, a lot of cities have free walking tours mm-hmm. where you, and I know it's touristy still, but like when you walk with these people, like the tour guides, you actually ask them questions and you get in a dialogue, you know, they're just so cool to talk mm-hmm. to. Like when we were in Buenos Aires in Argentina, mm-hmm. the tour guide actually like went into a lot of like the politics of what was going on, you know, Argentina's had a kind of tough time, as well as of course the attractions and whatever, but you get to know the concerns of the local people if you ask questions. And so you talk about just like mm-hmm. taking time to walk, and if people don't want to do that necessarily, but there are like tours that you could just take a walk through the town, and then you can then go back and explore the places that seemed interesting to you. And of course, like the food,
you can learn so much
from the food of a place.
I get so inspired.
And like you don't want to always just go to the touristy whatever, like go into the hole in the walls and like
the street food
exactly. Like one of my fondest memories is when I was in Mexico, I was in San Miguel, I had the street corn mm-hmm. that they have with like covered in like this mayo. So good. And like in China too, like some of the street food is a grilled squid and they put all these spices on it and stuff, and it's so good. And like you start talking to these people, I mean obviously if there's a language barrier, you know, that kind of thing, but like you talk to the, if you can talk to the, like the locals and just see what's up with them, you know, because it's not all about the touristy stuff. It's about the people,
the culture.
Yeah, the culture.
Around,
and, yeah. So I'm all about that. Like there are times on some vacations, like my husband is a planner. So he's like, we got to do this, we got to do this, then this. And then sometimes I'm like, let's just take a day where we don't plan anything that we can walk around and we can
improvise
just see what hits us, you know, that kind of thing. And sometimes it's like, that was okay. But sometimes it can lead to really cool discoveries.
Yeah.
Like when we were in Venice, gelato around every corner, right? And you just like, eat all this gelato. And then we found this lovely little wine bar. We just happened upon it. You can get a glass of wine for €1, you know? And, so we were just, so we went,
That's dangerous.
Very dangerous, but like it was good wine. And we just went back there like every other day that we were in Venice because we just found it. We didn't look it up or anything. We just found it.
Right.
Just by walking around. So it's just, it was so cool.
Yeah. Sometimes those are those hidden gems that you were just mentioning. You mentioned that you had some travel stories that you might want to share.
Yeah. So there have been some near disasters, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
So, but like not anything too bad, but like there's one time. Oh, actually it was when we were in Venice. It's not really a disaster. It's just kind of just like a fun little story of like sweet talking people. So like when we were in Venice, I was in a festival in Austria. I was at Ames. So we had gone on a weekend trip to Venice and then my husband was then going to go off to other places. But like I missed my train to go back to Austria, to Graz. And I was like, oh no, because I had like a rehearsal, you know, that evening and I was like, ugh, you know. And so I basically went up to the next train conductor and I was like, I was on that last train, but I just like, could you please let me on this? He's like, well, you don't have a ticket. And I was like, I know, but like blah blah blah. And I was just like, please help me. And then he was like, okay, I'll help you. So like he let me on, and like he actually gave me my own little private cart, which is fantastic. You know?
I was like,
so many other people are gonna be in this little thing. But then no one else came, and I was like, oh, that's so nice. But like other things, like one time, a same kind of trip actually. It's not me, but like my dad and my mom came to visit, and my dad's backpack got stolen, and his passport was in it.
Oh, no.
But luckily, we were, so he couldn't go back, but he was stuck with me in Austria.
Yeah.
But luckily, at one of the concerts, the American ambassador had come to that concert. The American ambassador to Austria was at the concert.
Yeah.
So I was like, excuse me, Mr. Ambassador. You know, like, thank you for coming to my concert. Hey, here's my dad. Can you help him?
So, yeah. Here's my dad.
Yeah, like, because, you know, we like try to get him back, whatever. And so it was just kind of funny. Yeah. And
clearly it worked. I mean,
it was fine. I think he got it a little expedited as well to help my dad out. Okay. So he was able to leave sooner, which is, it's just great, you know? Yeah. And like, I don't know, other travel stuff. I guess with WinSync, sometimes we have like flight delays and stuff like that, there's one time that I'm the touring director for the group, so I do like all the logistics, and I also am the point person with the presenters all over the country. There was one time I think we were in two separate cars and two of the members were in another car, and then they called me and they're like, yeah, we're gonna like miss our flight. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, GPS kept remapping us and it kept getting us further and further away, and now we're gonna miss our flight. And I was like,
what?
Oh my gosh. And so I called the airline, and again, sweet talking, I was like, yeah, so my colleagues are calling me and they had a flat tire and they're gonna miss the flight. Can they get on the next flight? And they're like, we have to charge a fee. And I was like, well, this is like an out, you know, situation out of their hands. And they're like, well, you need to show us a receipt for the tire repair. And I was like, no, it's just them. They're the two of them just on the side of the road. There's not gonna be anybody helping them. Like, is there anything you can do to help us? It's like a desperate situation. And they were like, okay, fine. So I got them on the next flight, and it was without having to pay an extra fee. And there's been a lot of times like that, like when, you know, airlines or rental cars like trying to charge us extra. There was one time the back window of our minivan like exploded for no reason. Glass was everywhere, but it was like shattered.
Yeah.
And it was like a really loud pop, and we were like, what just happened? So we had to exchange it, obviously, at the next town we were going to. Mm-hmm. And the company tried to charge us for it, and I was like, excuse me, this, we didn't shatter this. This car was faulty. Like, we were in danger. Like, that.
Right.
Like, don't. And then our driver usually is our flutist, Garrett Hudson. Yeah. And I was like, I'm calling on behalf of Mr. Hudson, the blah, 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 and stuff like that. And they're like, okay, never mind. We won't try, you know, like, silly things like that, you know?
What's like your favorite place you've ever been? Is it hard to say? Is that
No, I have, my favorite city is Vienna, for sure. Because
interesting.
A little of the history, of course, and like, and it's so funny. I always tell like my non-musician friends, they're like, oh, you're going to all these places. Like, what are you going to do there? And I'm like, well, I'm going to visit this graveyard and this graveyard and because I've seen all the composers.
What?
Like, very strange.
Yeah.
But no, there's so much classical music history in Vienna. There's music, like classical music around every corner. It's like, and then also there's a restaurant that food, right? Mm-hmm. It's called the Black Camel, but in German, I can't remember what it's called in German.
Right.
But that's where Beethoven used to eat, apparently. So like I was definitely like, we got to go there. So like, I've been to Vienna now, like only twice, but I've eaten at that place both times, and it's great.
Yeah.
And everyone's so nice in Vienna, and everyone can speak multiple languages. So even if you don't speak German, they can speak to you, and they're so, like, when you're in Paris, you know, the French people are like, I don't want to talk to you. But like, like in Austria, like, they love talking. Like, one guy, like, we were lost, and he like walked with us out of his way to get us to where we were going. And then, and we were like,
so
thank
nice.
You so much. And he was just like, it's my pleasure. You know, like, it's so nice. And like, my other favorite city is Hong Kong, actually. Because, again, similar reasons. Like,
sorry, I immediately.
Wait, what?
I was like, the food.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. For the food, of course. Yeah. But like, also like, the people there are also like trilingual, you know, like the, they speak all these languages and everyone can speak with you. And like, the people, at least that I've interacted with, were very nice. And like, the food is just, I was with my dad and we went to a restaurant that was on an island, Llama Island. You can walk around the whole island in like an hour. It's very small.
Yeah.
But there's a restaurant right on the water, and the waiters or whoever buys the fish from the fishermen, the little boats just right on the water. They get the fish and they bring it to your table. They're like, this is what looked good. And just eat it.
That's the best.
It's the best. And like, I just, I loved my time there in Hong Kong. Yeah. And I, of course, I love Taipei. You know, I've been there a lot. And
the food again.
The night markets, you can't beat it. The food.
Yeah.
Taiwan, of course, Taipei is fantastic. I loved Melbourne when I went there. There's a free bus that you can just go all around the city. Just, it's free. And just walking around.
This will be my final question, but if you have any remaining thoughts, please share them with me. But mine is, what's next on your bucket list of locations other than Antarctica and Africa or Kenya?
Right. I would say WinSync has the opportunity to go to London in the fall to record at Abbey Road Studios, which is fantastic because Abbey Road is like awesome. Yep. And I've been to London before, but I guess next for me would be to go to some countries in Europe that I haven't been to. Like I've been to Spain, but I haven't been to Portugal. So I'd love to go to Portugal. I'd love to go to the Netherlands. I've not been there. Mm-hmm. And then like I'd love to actually go to like Switzerland and Belgium because I've only been to the airport in Belgium. That doesn't count.
No.
But like, but yeah, and just kind of since I'll be there, going to see some of the other countries I didn't get to see before. Sure. But in terms of like another just for fun trip, like not with business or anything, I would love to go for sure back to Taiwan to see my grandma, but also to visit some of the Asian countries I haven't visited. I haven't been to South Korea. And I've been to Japan, but only to Okinawa. I've been to Okinawa, but I haven't been to Tokyo. And I love Japanese food. Sushi is my favorite food. Not your cat, but sushi.
No, I know.
But I love the Japanese culture. So I'd love to actually go to the mainland Japan and to Tokyo specifically. Yeah. My husband wants to go to some of the Southeast Asian countries like Thailand or Vietnam. And I'd love to go to Singapore. I've never been to Singapore. I'd also love to go to Bali. I did Gamelan when I was at Eastman. I was in the Gamelan ensemble.
Cool.
And that music is so cool. Like different intonation, you know? And it's like what we call out of tune, they call the music is alive because it vibrates, you know? And I just love that. And so I'd love to actually go to Bali and see a gamelan ensemble in person. Yeah. So lots of dreams.
Yeah. I mean, and keep dreaming because it will happen. I mean, now that pandemic is slowly lifting, I hope.
Yeah.
Cross fingers.
Yeah. Let's hope. Yeah. If everyone does their part, you know, be safe and, you know, get the vaccines and stuff, like everything can go back to normal. It really can. So,
Well, thanks for sharing some of your travel stories. And I clearly know if I need any recommendations, I can, you can ask you.
Let me know. And my husband keeps meticulous logs of like all the places. He's a food person too. So he's like, we've eaten here. So like, let me know.
Absolutely. Okay. Can I ask you two final questions?
Yes.
Yeah. What is one piece of advice you would tell your younger self about entering and pursuing a music career? The thing is, I feel like you've already answered this, but I don't know if you have another answer.
I would tell myself that, you know, I think like when I was in the throes of the dual degree, I was so busy. I was not practicing a lot because I didn't have time. But, and I'm glad I didn't quit the other degree because I feel like I've become a very well-rounded person. And also I bring other things into my music, not just music. But I would tell myself to watch out for your health a little bit more than you have. Yeah. Because when I was younger, especially in college, I really didn't take good care of myself. There was one point where my friends had to kind of do like an intervention where I was like subsisting off of ramen cup noodles because I just didn't have time to like go to the dining center or whatever. And they sat me down and made me eat like vegetables.
It
was really not healthy, I don't think. And so I wish I had taken care of myself a little better when I was younger. Now I'm very health conscious. I like to, you know, run. Yep. I do, you know, half marathons, marathons and whatever. But when I was younger, it wasn't great because I feel like if you are healthy and you take care of yourself as a person, as a human being, that's going to positively influence whatever you're trying to do, whether it's music, whether it's being a medical student. I know that like you're in high stress situations, you know, if you can sleep, you gotta sleep. Like don't take that for granted because there were days, man, like I was just, it was a mess. But like I said, I don't regret it, but I wish I would have taken a step back and like taking care of myself. And if for those musicians out there, like when you're getting ready to perform, when you're getting ready to do something that's stressful, take an audition, make sure you get a good night's sleep, make sure you eat healthily, you drink lots of water, because sometimes people forget to do that and that can affect how you play. The adrenaline can get out of hand, you know, but your physical health is very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great advice. Yeah. And my second question, as we enter a post-pandemic world-ish, what elements of your musical pandemic life would you want to continue and what would you want to shed?
Oh, well, I definitely want to continue doing my little recording projects, you know, like I actually found that to be pretty fun. I've been too busy to do it, but I actually really enjoyed doing that. I would like to shed being on the computer as much as I was because I actually also, during the pandemic, I became an amateur audio engineer where WinSync actually did recordings where I made like a click plus a drone and we all recorded and layered. I was the one who put it all together. And so I learned some sound editing. I learned some video editing for myself.
Out of necessity.
And I'd like to keep that, but I would also like to not just be sitting at my computer for like 10 hours straight and realize, oh, I haven't gotten up. Ooh, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened during the pandemic is people are sitting around and on their computers too much. So,
agreed.
I'd like to
To keep you on.
Oh, no. This is totally fine. I mean, like, but it's a good thing in that you can get more connected with people across the country.
Absolutely.
It's so easy
now. No, yeah.
But it's also like, get up and go outside,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Agreed. Are there any platforms or websites for listeners to learn more about you or any upcoming projects?
Yeah. So you can, of course, visit my YouTube channel. It's Oboe Friend. I have a personal website. It's a Oboe Friend-Music Square site. It's a Square site. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, but if you look that up, I have some stuff on there. And then, of course, if you want to follow WinSync on social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm not the social media person. you can follow winsync.org. We have a lot of stuff going on there.
Get the album.
And our album, yes, please. Actually trying to go to get on the Billboard charts here if we can.
Cool. Yeah, so that'd be great.
Any support would be wonderful. And it's really great music. Like I am so proud of this album that we're putting out. So
All right. And if you enjoyed listening, be sure to smash that subscribe button wherever you're tuning into this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. It doesn't need to be long. Your review will help others search for the podcast because of its crazy algorithms, and you'll make Sushi's day. And it's free. Make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family as well. If you want to level up, you can always become part of the Hidden Behind the Music Stand family by donating what you will on our Patreon page at patreon.com/HiddenMusicStand. Our social media handle for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is @HiddenMusicStand, and we'd love to hear from you at our email, hidingmusicstand@gmail.com. Didn't recognize the piece we discussed during the episode? No worries. There's a Spotify playlist with all the music discussed for your convenience. Actually, is WinSync on Spotify?
Yeah, some of it. Yeah, we have a Pulcinella suite that we did on Spotify.
Yeah,
and
Stravinsky.
I think our new album is going to be eventually on Spotify too, but we have a single.
There you go.
Yeah, we have a single out.
Okay,
yeah.
So just head over while you're looking up the WinSync album or other content. You can also check out our Spotify playlist. And the link is always in the description of each episode. Emily, thank you so much for joining me today on the show. It's been such a pleasure to catch up with you and to see all the amazing things you're doing and all the amazing places you're going.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was fun. I really love this. This is just like a catching up with the gals, old gals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that was great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Anytime you're in the Twin Cities, let me know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, sounds great. All right. And thanks for listening.
Say bye, Sushi.